Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are now about to be joined by Dr. Stephen Zunis, who is Professor of Political Politics and International Studies and Chair of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco, Senior Policy Analyst with Foreign Policy in Focus, author of the books Western Sahara, War Nationalism and Conflict, Irresolution and Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism. And Stephen Zunis, welcome back. Good to have you with us. It's been a while.
Good morning.
So let's do a little bit of analysis of what's going on here in Syria. And, of course, the biggest news is the attack by Israel, the air attacks in Israel by Israel on what they say were missile shipments and more that were going to Hezbollah. What's your take on that?
Well, strictly speaking, these kind of attacks are illegal under international law. After all, there are quite a few countries that have missiles capable of striking other countries, including Israel, which has been responsible for many hundreds of civilian deaths in Lebanon and Gaza Strip and elsewhere. At the same time, there is some indication that this was a whole new sophisticated level of weaponry, but some reports are that they were surface missiles capable of hitting Israeli cities. Others, there are other indications that it may have simply been anti-aircraft missiles to try to curb Israel from its ability to attack military and civilian targets within Lebanon. But in any case, it does appear to have been about Israel's perceived security concerns and not that Israel was necessarily entering the civil war. So certainly the Assad regime is going to try to make the most of this, trying to link the Israeli attack with the revolution that's risen up against him.
I mean, it seems one of the things I don't think that it, in terms of what could happen next, people say this can create a wider war. But I think that given the battle that President Assad and Hezbollah and his allies are fighting against the various rebel forces, it would not be in their interest to have Hezbollah attack Israel at the moment.
No, not at all. And more importantly, at least as far as the rebels are concerned, is that it fits in so neatly with the propaganda, with the narrative that the Syrian regime has had that this is some kind of big Zionist conspiracy, which is somehow tied into a radical Islamist conspiracy, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, ironically, the Syrian opposition issued a statement saying, condemning the attack, but also condemning the Syrian regime, basically saying, you're so busy using the military to slaughter fellow Syrians, you're unable to protect us from this act of Israeli aggression.
Professor, I want to ask you a very interesting interview earlier today on NPR where one of the spokeswomen for the opposition went as far as to say, and I don't know if you heard this, that they believe that Assad is working with Netanyahu and the Israeli government that they could really hype up and ramp up anti-rebel sentiment in Syria. I was stunned by that analysis, but in this...
That's obviously extreme and conspiratorial, but there's no question. there's no question that the Assad regime will milk it for whatever it gets. I mean, they will really play on it. I mean, just within within hours of the attack, there's this somebody was making T-shirts that said, don't worry, rebels, Israel has your back, and it showed a scene of this Israeli warplane bombing something, you know. I mean, this is the kind of propaganda, because, the uprising in Syria was a broad-based, indigenous, democratic, nonviolent, movement, wanting to very similar to the unarmed insurrections, nonviolent struggles we'd seen in other Arab countries as part of the Arab Spring. But when it turned violent, after 6 or 8 months, and more it's become these armed factions, some of which are made up of some pretty sketchy elements. The regime has the regime's initial claims that these are all foreigners or terrorists or whatever, was laughable when they first started saying it. But more and more, there's at least an element of reality to it. And so again, they will just use the timing for whatever physical damage may have been done on the Syrian military's infrastructure. Politically, it's an advantage to the regime.
And we had a debate on Syria here last week on the program, and it was an interesting one in that what we think, A, should be the Western response. Real disagreement on how the West should respond to what's going on in Syria, if it can respond at all. That we have to have a completely different policy because intervening is not working. Whether it's supporting Israel or intervening in Iraq and Iraq is not working. So I mean, I'm curious to just take it from there. Your analysis of what's happening within Syria and what should be the Western role at this moment, if anything.
Well, there generally is human rights abuses. War crimes, whatever you want to call it, on a dramatic scale, the majority of which, not all, but the vast majority of which are being done by the regime against the Syrian people. It is no excuses can be made for the Assad regime in terms of its brutality. The problem, though, is that as the armed struggle has increased, it's given the regime an excuse to get away with even more of this kind of violence. And coming in and just sending more arms into a place where are already too many people getting killed is going to make things worse, especially since the armed opposition, in addition to, as I mentioned, there are some good pro-democratic moderate elements in it. There are increasing numbers of hardline Salafists, some of which have ties with al-Qaeda. And not just, and people say, well, the Free Syrian Army, they're the moderate wing, we'll help the Free Syrian Army. But the Free Syrian Army is not really an organized entity. It is a collection of literally hundreds of militia, local militia, many of which are very hardline Salafist in orientation. Sending a shoulder-fired rocket launcher might protect a village from a helicopter gunship, but by shooting it down, but it can also shoot down civilian airliners. We think about Afghanistan, where Afghans are being slaughtered by the Soviets. We gave these arms to the Mujahideen, but 80% of it ended in the arms of the Hekmatyar faction, Hizb Islami, which ended up not only slaughtering thousands of Afghans, but they are now allied with the Taliban and are killing U.S. forces. So, there's a real danger of getting involved in these kinds of factious conflicts.
Yeah, I think that this is we watch this kind of thinking that Syria, that the Assad government is somehow committing atrocities. I mean, atrocities haven't committed, but people have raised the issue of genocide, which is a reason to go in, that we have to stop it, like we have to intervene, some congressmen are saying. But, I mean, while there have been 30,000 people killed, is that right, Stephen?
70,000 at this point.
70,000, yeah. I mean, right. I mean, there's no sense of genocide. There's no sense of kind of mass, huge mass murders of thousands.
It's not sort of a legal definition of genocide.
Right.
Again, it's quite horrific. And, personally, if I thought that sending arms to the rebels or even establishing a no-fly zone or getting involved directly would substantially reduce the killing or would advance the prospects of a democratic and stable Syria, I'd be willing to support it. My opposition to intervention is not out of an ideological or an isolationist or an indifferent or a pacifist attitude. This is just strategically looking at the situation, I really can't see how it would help. Indeed, historically, when you have outside powers intervening in civil wars, even in the names of humanitarian intervention, it has almost always increased the rate of killing, prolonged the war, and made an even more unstable situation because the rebels deal with these armed powers at their back. They don't need to compromise. They don't need to negotiate. And the regime at that point say, "Hey, we have absolutely nothing to lose now." And the gloves come off completely, and things get even worse.
Well, Dr. Stephen Zunis, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. I appreciate you taking your time, and we look forward to having you on for a longer segment in the coming weeks.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we will take a look at that. I think this is as this unravels and changes.